Stunned silence.
What is
this? A bit of an episode, right?
So I must be doing something wrong.
And it's playing its playing as that's it.
Tell us what you're doing.
I just can't think of it.
I love the enthusiasm. Go. You're tuned to the 15 Station, New Zealand's first Catholic podcast. This is episode 70 for July 15, 2013. And I'm your host, James. And we're not in rendition studios tonight, as you may be able to tell by the sound quality. And Joseph's probably wailing and gnashing his teeth at the moment. But I do have Gavin. How are you doing, Gavin?
Good, thanks, James. Good to talk to you over the wonders of Skype.
Hey, the wonders of the internets all in action here.
They could they could be our sponsors, Skype.
They could. Well, they'll be Microsoft, given that they bought Skype. But
That stuff. Other news.
Other news. How you doing, mate?
Yeah, pretty good. It's we've had a very, very cold snap.
Have you?
In Canberra, which by most, like, you'll probably say it's been cold in Auckland, but
it has been
today
cold.
The high was 8.
8 degrees Celsius.
Last week we had a day that the high was 7.
That's not warm. That's not.
So we're talking about sort of low to mid 40s for our American listeners. And that's not very warm because, like, Australia's supposed to be warm. And when you live in New Zealand, you're like, oh, I'll move to Australia because the weather's better.
Then
there's Canberra.
Yeah, I saw a thing tonight talking about, on the news actually, talking about, like, in part of the US having a massive heat wave where they're getting up past 50 degrees.
Mm. Well, they've had those terrible bushfires in Arizona earlier this month that...
I honestly don't know why the 15th Station starts with the Catholic weather report, but it seems to most weeks, but most months.
It's because you always ask about it.
Well, I'm asking how's your month been? How are things? Just how's
good.
The weather?
Things are good.
Oh, look, you've been got that busy. Accent. Yeah, yeah.
We'll be talking later about what's been keeping me busy, but...
Well, we will. In the meantime, let's talk about what should be keeping... bishops busy. This is from the Catholic News Agency. Tracing the characteristics he wants to see in candidates to serve as bishops, Pope Francis said they must be pastors who are close to their people, fathers and brothers, who are meek, patient and merciful. A good prospective bishop will love interior poverty as freedom for the Lord and live that externally with a simple lifestyle, and he won't have the mindset of a prince, the Pope said June 21st during a meeting with nuncios and apostolic delegates. The 108 papal representatives to nations and international organizations, along with 40 retired nuncios, were making a two-day year of faith pilgrimage. 2 year pilgrimage would be pretty extreme, to the Vatican, and were scheduled to dine under the stars that evening with Pope Francis in the Vatican Gardens. The majority of the Vatican diplomats and nuncios or apostolic delegates to one or more countries. Pope Francis said one of the most important tasks they have is studying the needs of vacant dioceses and helping him find appropriate candidates for the ministry. It's a delicate task, the Pope said. Beware of those who are ambitious, who seek the episcopacy. Pope Francis said the best priest to choose as bishop or the best bishop to choose to head a larger diocese or archdiocese is one who is wed to his diocese, the spouse of one church who is not constantly seeking another. I will comment more about this when it's not being recorded, the Pope told the nuncios who laughed. He's a funny guy, isn't he, Pope Francis? He's got a few quotes and, you know, he's still very much in the limelight. But what did you make of the Pope's calls around what he's looking for in his bishops there, Gavin?
I do think there would have been a few bishops around the world who wondered if they were being considered when he talked about how he didn't want bishops who were princes. I know that around the world there were some secular news agencies that I think took a bit of glee in running articles around that. So I think with a thinly veiled swipe at the local bishops in their part of the world who they may consider to be princes. And I also wonder when you head to these sorts of soirees, this two-day soiree in Rome, whether they think now, oh, what are we going to get for dinner? We go to someone, are we going to have any wine? You know, Pope Francis's sort of whole mindset of poverty, you know, lived correctly. You know, I wonder if some of these nuncios are going there and they're getting sort of meals that they're not used to because they, I mean, you know, they're diplomats and they've got very important roles to play, and often part of that lifestyle is nice wine and dine. So I think he's right. I think that we certainly know a bishop in Auckland who is a very pastoral man, I would say. And I think it's a term that can sometimes be used as a pejorative, really.
Yeah.
Some people say, oh, he's very pastoral, but he has no leadership skills, or he's not a good teacher, or whatever it might be. So I think there obviously needs to be a balance, because the bishop teach, govern, and sanctify. Does that sound right?
Sounds right. Sounds good. Yep.
Bishops have a threefold ministry, and I think those are the three. We'll certainly hear quickly if they're not. So those are the three things that he is charged with doing. And I think all three are very important. Having someone who's very pastoral, and obviously Pope Francis himself has a strong reputation as being a very pastoral priest and later bishop and cardinal. So he's not saying, hey, I want you to be more like me. I'm sure that's not what he's saying. But he's trying to recognize that the church needs to be one of the people. Not a sort of not hierarchy in the negative sense of the word.
It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, I think that, when you do look at some of the bishops around the world and archbishops and even cardinals who are known as the princes of the church, it is interesting to have the Pope really sort of challenging some of that. I know that, you know, and I'm sure you'd probably have this with some of your friends as well, Gavin, especially those who aren't of the faith, that there's a sense of, if only the church would, sell all its gold and all its, precious artifacts and give the money to the poor. And I've tried to explain to my friends on that, you know, when you're looking at things that have been bequested to the church for a specific purpose, you know, it's not as simple just selling things up. But even if you did, the poor will always be with us, to quote some famous guy who said that. But I do think that this challenge that goes out to the hierarchy around living humbly, you know, simple lifestyle, and not having the mindset of the prince, it's tricky, isn't it? I mean, the official term for a bishop's residence is the apostolic palace. And when we call the cardinals, like I say, the princes of the church, there's certain, I won't say trappings, but there's certain aspects of their office which I would say are appropriate. So, for example, having a staff, having assistants, having people like, secretaries and things like that, that would be, to me, something that makes sense given the size and scale of their role. Having a, personal chef, you could argue maybe would be an efficiency play, so they're not having to worry about cooking their own meals and they can focus more on pastoral matters. But the flip side would be, really? A chef? Really? So I think that, especially in some of the big archdioceses, I mean, if you think of the big sort of super cities where you've got a potential diocese, diocese in the millions, there's a lot of structure and hierarchy that needs to go into this. But I mean, he could quite as easily have said, they should be thinking to be like Christ, not like CEOs, because that's forgetting the royalty component. That's very much the approach that we have for CEOs. They get recompensed accordingly, a lot of responsibility. It's a tricky one.
Mm. Yeah, and it's another story that certainly grabbed a few headlines because the media continue to be sort of in a bit of a love fest, like Francis. And when the show comes out, hopefully that'll still be the case. But I think every day I wake up wondering if something would have happened overnight to change things. So let's keep fingers crossed that it continues at least until the show goes live and people listen to it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think we are recording this this episode very early in the month, due to some travel requirements by some of the people on this podcast who are speaking at this moment. But I think that if there's some late breaking news in the next week or so, and we miss it, we'll cover it in August. But yes, I do. So I think that's interesting that this is what the Pope was calling out, and I hope that the bishops heed his call, so to speak, because we could always do with good examples to a very materialistic world from people in office inside the church.
Yeah.
Speaking of heeding the call, I'm not sure whether this call will be heeded, but this is from the Huffington Post. A U.S. priest is suggesting churches drop the word marriage. In an opinion piece published on the Archdiocese of Washington website, a Roman Catholic religious leader offered a distinctive response to the Supreme Court's ruling that struck down the Defense of Marriage Act, or DOMA. Monsignor Charles Pope lamented that since 1969, when it became easier to divorce, contraception became widely available, and now that the legal standing of gay marriages has been put on equal footing with those of heterosexual couples, that the word marriage no longer has resonance within the Catholic faith. The quote is, "It is a simple fact that the word marriage, as we have traditionally known it to be, as we have traditionally known it, is being redefined in our times. To many in the secular world, the word no longer means what it once did, and when the church uses the word marriage, we clearly do not mean what the increasing number of states mean." End quote. The pastor of Holy Comforter St. Cyprian then went on to suggest that the Catholic Church drop the word marriage altogether and use holy matrimony in its place. Now, Gavin, when you put this in the lineup, I thought, oh, he's being a bit of a, this is a bit controversial, a bit stirry. A US priest suggesting that the church drop marriage, and I started reading it going, oh, look, I'm not sure. But towards the end of it, got to be honest, I got to say there's some merit to what he's saying.
Well, and it is the word that, you know, we use the term marriage when we talk about the seven sacraments. And I think the official church term in the English, anyway, is matrimony as the sacrament. But we often use the word marriage interchangeably with that, which is fine. But I think there is an interesting point here, this idea of sort of reclaiming that word and embracing it. Because there's been a big debate here in Australia recently. There's been a change of prime minister who...
Back to the future.
Yeah, back to the future. So the former prime minister who was stabbed in the back and sent packing has now stabbed the person who stabbed him in the back and her back, and is now the prime minister again, if that makes sense.
The stabby has become the stabber.
Yes. So, and he is now the first Australian prime minister to be a proponent of same-sex marriage. So after the same-sex marriage was voted down in Australia last year, and then an attempt to basically allow international same-sex marriages to be recognised in Australia was recently also voted down. Now the Prime Minister is a supporter of same-sex marriage, so it's been thrust back into the public sphere after being roundly defeated in a couple of parliamentary attempts last year. So this is certainly on the radar here in Australia. In New Zealand, where it was recently passed and will become law, I think, in August, and in the US, obviously, where this is happening a lot. Still, there's 12 or 13 countries in the world where it's legal, so we're still talking very small numbers. But this is an interesting response to it, to try and reclaim this word matrimony and use that as a distinctive word, because, as this says, you know, the word marriage is being redefined. You know, in 3 or 4 years, the New Zealand Oxford Dictionary and the, you know, the Webster or the Collins or whatever in the US, I wonder what they're going to say under marriage. I mean, they're just going to have to change how they actually define the word. So the church is thinking, well, we need to reclaim what we've always understood and get away from using that word as something that we just use interchangeably with matrimony.
And I think that's the key point for me, is that is as we've always understood it. So the church's definition of marriage is actually not changing. It's the secular version, you know, that is changing. And while the gay marriage aspect, so called, is the most recent, or the most public effort in terms of this redefinition, from the moment when we started to redefine marriage as being something where there was, you know, divorce, which there isn't in matrimony, you can't get divorced. You can be annulled, but you can't get divorced. You know, or something where contraception, artificial contraception, was a regular feature. And again, that's not the case with holy matrimony. Or something which can be presided over by... you know, a civil, a celebrant. You know, all these various components which have crept into the definition of marriage, and which one could argue the institution of marriage has weakened substantially from potentially when it was a one-for-one comparison with the institution of matrimony. I kind of look at this and say, well, maybe it seems a bit extreme to some people, or it's a bit of a, a provocation more than a proposal. But I've got to tell you, from a marketing slash branding slash communications education perspective, there is some merit to being said. This is the opposite of opposite? It's the opposite. not quite the opposite. It's more like it's the same, but it's parallel. The concept I was hearing thrown around during the gay marriage debate in New Zealand was, from some corners, the church should not only should the government not be involved with same-sex marriages, they shouldn't be involved with marriage at all, and actually get right out of it, or have the religion component taken right out of it. So marriage is actually not a religious thing. And that you have, you know, everyone has a civil union, and then marriages is purely a religious thing. There are all these kind of, you know, variations, but I hadn't quite heard this one, which was the same thing in essence. How do we grab back a simple-ish term, a way of explaining that what we hold to be true when it comes to joining a man and a woman for the purposes of creating a family, that is actually the dictionary definition of matrimony. I mean, I don't know how often I use marriage in a sentence, generally speaking. I would say married a bit. I am married. So you can't really say I'm matrimonied.
Well, maybe we could go with something.
Surely.
Yeah. Surely. So maybe if they haven't already, the New Zealand bishop should be giving this a bit of consideration as they prepare for the implementation of the law in a few weeks.
Yeah.
And look to launch some sort of campaign, if you will, to underline what they were saying during the debate about the sanctity of marriage as between a man and a woman for the purpose of raising a family.
I don't know if there'll be much traction behind it, but I think it's an interesting conversation nonetheless. And
that's why I put it in the show.
Not a bad idea.
Maybe this is why everyone else couldn't come. They thought it was too provocative.
Too provocative?
So only the host and the guy who sends the show notes could come on.
That's what it was. Actually, we did expect to have more people. But that's all right. That's all right.
That's what happens in winter.
That is what happens in winter. Other things happen in winter, and hopefully this is a one-off and doesn't happen again, but this is from the New Zealand Herald. A nun has admitted to breaking the arm, of a 9-year-old at Sunday school after the girl failed to get an action song right. Liva I Fangalupe Fono, forgive me for the pronunciation.
This is the first time we've had we normally got like Polish or Italian names, and
That's not bad. I mean, it sounds a little. I don't know. She's also known as Sister Liva.
You go with that one.
Yeah, let's go with that. Yelled at the girl, flicked her in the head, and broke the girl's arm when she twisted it behind her back. She is seeking forgiveness from the family. I should bloody well hope so. And plans to take part in a restorative justice conference with the girl and her family ahead of her sentencing in August. Sister Liva was one of the teachers leading a group practice of an action song for upcoming celebrations at St. Patrick's Pamua in April last year. She had originally denied a charge of assault on a child and injuring the girl with reckless disregard when her trial at the Auckland District Court began on Monday. But today, Sister Liva pled guilty to 2 charges of assault on a child shortly after the Crown finished calling evidence against her and effectively removed the more serious charge of injuring with reckless disregard. Catholic Church spokeswoman Lindsay Freer said she could not comment on the case specifically. She said the church has a zero tolerance for violence in parishes and schools. No one from St. Patrick's Church was available for comment to the New Zealand Herald. This is pretty shocking, Gavin. This is harking back to, you know, nuns and straps and broken rulers and, you know, the sort of the heyday of the Jansenist past.
Yeah, this is quite crazy that you would. Now, they say a nun. She's really a religious sister. I don't think she's a nun. I had a religious sister many years ago point out to me that nuns are typically cloistered and often wear habits. And they were religious sisters, and we shouldn't call them nuns.
I didn't form the distinction between the two.
Well, the reason when you work in a newspaper to use nun is because it's a lot shorter in the headline. So that was how it came about. And then this religious sister contacted me and said, gave me the sort of lesson. She didn't break my arm, thankfully, but she gave me a lesson on the distinction, which I found useful. So I think she's a religious sister. It doesn't mention which order, which is interesting. They don't say which order she's part of. But, yeah, this is quite disturbing that, I mean, even the first, before the arm was broken, flicked her in the head, yelled at the girl.
Yeah.
Flicked her in the head and broke the girl's arm.
That's the thing. I mean, there could be extenuating circumstances that we're not aware of. I mean, the girl could have had, you know, I don't know, fragile bones or whatever else. The point, that's absolutely beside the point. It should never have even got to a situation where she was in jeopardy of having this. And the thing that for me is, and I mean, granted, there may be even cultural aspects here, which I'm not familiar with, but surely, I mean, it's 2013, for crying out loud, in New Zealand. We shouldn't be in a situation where this is what is happening in a Catholic environment.
Well, this is
in any Sunday environment. School. In any environment, yeah. Yeah,
and this is Sunday school. And this is another thing. So I wonder if it was like CCD or some sort of such thing that was happening at sort of a, and Sunday school was a convenient way of describing it. But I think yelling at a child in the first instance is not great. Flicking her in the head, certainly not. And anything that would break a girl's arm. It's certainly to be, you know, criticised and slammed and critiqued at every opportunity.
Absolutely right, and so I think
this is a terribly sad story.
No excuse for it at all, and I think that absolutely, and that's it. Zero tolerance is the right word for it.
Yeah.
Of increasing tolerance from the Catholic News Agency is our brethren across the Tiber. This is. With the Pope meeting the new Archbishop of Canterbury. Anglican Archbishop Justin Welby of Canterbury and Pope Francis met for the first time and issued a joint call for unity rooted in the love of God. I know that during your Grace's installation in Canterbury Cathedral, you remembered in prayer the new Bishop of Rome. I am deeply grateful to you, and since we began our respective ministries within days of each other, I think we will always have a particular reason to support one another in prayer, Pope Francis said on June the 14th. The meeting began with a private audience at 11 o'clock in the Papal Library, which was followed by their separate addresses and an exchange of gifts. The Pope and Archbishop concluded their encounter with a moment of prayer in the Redemptoris Mater Chapel. In his address to Archbishop Welby, Pope Francis offered him a warm welcome that recalled when Archbishop Michael Ramsay visited Paul VI in 1966, the first time an Anglican primate visited Rome. Pope Francis then noted that, quote, the history of relations between the Church of England and the Catholic Church is long and complex and not without pain, but recent decades have been marked by a journey of rapprochement and fraternity, and for this we give heartfelt thanks to God, he said. These firm bonds of friendship, he added, have enabled us to remain on course even when difficulties have arisen in our theological dialogue that were greater than we could have foreseen at the start of our journey. I've never quite before, this is me talking now, not the Pope, I never quite before, Gavin, heard the differences between the Anglican Church and the Catholic Church as being, how did he phrase it? The history of relations is long and complex. Yes, it is. Yes, it is, Holy Father. I would agree with that. And not without pain, I would also agree with that. But this has got to be positive for ecumenicism.
Ecumenicism and ism and ism?
Exactly.
Ecumenism.
Ecumenism. This has got to be a good thing for ecumenism. You're going to have to edit this anyway, so you may as well edit that part as well.
No. Raw and unedited.
Raw and unedited, 50. That's right.
Yeah, I'm always curious, and there's a New Zealand connection here too, because the one of the men who was assisting at this meeting is Archbishop David Moxon, who's from Waikato, the Anglican Archdiocese or Diocese of Waikato in New Zealand, and we spoke because he is now one of the main people involved in the Anglican Roman Catholic discussions that take place. He's based at the Vatican now, so he was at this meeting, and there's a report on the New Zealand Herald that spoke about his reflections on the meeting, but I was lucky enough probably about 4 years ago now to have spoken to someone who was involved in the Monsignor Juan Usmar Gomez from the Pontifical Council for Promoting Christian Unity on Katakiwi, one of the former incarnations on the 15th Station Network. And he's spoken that podcast about the fact that we've got to a point where Christian religions sort of agree that on about 90% of issues, you know, we're on the same page. And it is the sort of 10% or sometimes less, depending on which denomination we're talking about. That is what's focused upon. But really, we can look and see, and you can make the same comment around some areas around with Judaism, not theologically, but on a lot of issues, we share the same values as Judaism, as Islam, as some other faiths in terms of social conventions and how people should behave and act towards one another. So this is another example of how, and the Archbishop of Canterbury being probably one of the other major leaders in terms of a church that has a clear leader. There aren't many Protestant churches that you can look at and say, okay, well, that person is the head of the Baptists in the world, or that person's the head of the Lutherans in the world, or whatever it might be. The Anglicans, obviously, with the Archbishop of Canterbury, have someone that the Pope can stand alongside and say, these are the things that we're trying to commit to that we see we have in common, and that we can work together on for the betterment of the world. So I think it's always good when that's an opportunity. And it is interesting that these positions have coincided with, you know, within a couple of weeks of one another, with the new Archbishop, which is a sort of a 10-year appointment that just happened to coincide around the same time that Pope Benedict stepped down and Pope Francis was elected. So there's a nice synergy.
I think it is, and I think it's also good that they, you know, they sort of recognize, as we often, you know, pray in the church, that, you know, that all would be one, and you, the only way you start that is by at least opening the conversations. And I think that there's been, you know, big strides made by Pope John Paul II, and continued by Pope Benedict the 16th, and now it looks like continued by Pope Francis, which is to sort of open the arms, you know, and try and sort of shake hands as friends and sort of talk, you know, let's build on there from that. And it's, I think it's easy for, let's say the more cynical amongst us to maybe diminish the merit of something as simple as some exchanged words. But to be quite honest, I mean, there, but, you know, for some exchanged words and niceties, you know, how many of wars could have been prevented? So I think it's good stuff, and I think that you know, it's important for these men of faith, because at the heart of it, you know, there, as you say, so much of our faiths are similar, are the same, and the only way we can really maybe bridge the gaps that are left by the differences is to at least talk about it and see where the gaps are.
Yeah, and we have to, you know, we have to recognize that we're living in a time, for us, this is not all that novel, but it's only, you know, it's less than 50 years since the first time that the Archbishop of Canterbury went to.
That's crazy.
When we think about it, you know, it's weird, but certainly my parents, yours are a little bit younger than my parents, but, you know, what used to go on between Catholics and Protestants, you know, the sort of taunting as Catholics were walking to school while the Protestants were going to a different school and all that sort of thing. So, so it's amazing how times have changed, and, you know, the Second Vatican Council was a big reason why the Church has reached out in that direction. And I think a reading of history suggests that it was the Catholic Church that was dragging the chain to some extent in that dialogue. So it's good that in, you know, 50 years or less, we've come quite a long way. And hopefully that continues to, you know, we continue to work together where we can. But recognizing that there are serious impediments to total unity at the moment, or reunity, or but the Catholic Church is finding ways for Anglicans to come back into the Catholic fold and enjoy some aspects of the of their Anglican heritage as well.
Absolutely. And if nothing else, then, like I say, if nothing else, at least we're starting down the path. Maybe one of the points of difference between the Catholic and Anglican churches could be on the price of Bibles. if this next story is anything to go by, also from the Huffington Post. You're a bit of a HuffPo reader this week, Gavin.
Yeah, well, anyone who's listened to the podcast or read my blog should understand that it's no surprise that I would be a big fan of such a left-leaning news outlet.
Yeah, early subscriber and donor, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, see, one of my usual places for our curious stories came up empty this month, so I had to go far and wide to find curious stories.
And curious, this one is. This is from the Huffington Post in New York. A Bible with an inscription from a little-known German scientist, Albert Einstein, has sold for $68,500. I'm assuming that's in American currency, at an auction in New York City. The Bible was part of a fine books and manuscripts auction at Bonhams on Tuesday. The German-born physicist and his wife signed it in 1932 and gifted it to an American friend named Harriet Hamilton. What is it with alliterative names in America? No, let's not go there. The auction house says Einstein writes in the German inscription, the Bible, writes in the German inscription that the Bible, quote, is a great source of wisdom and consolation and should be read frequently. I can't tell you how hard it was to read that quote and not try and read it in a really bad Einstein accent.
Oh, thank goodness.
The Bible's final price far exceeds, its pre-sale estimate of between $1,500 and $2,500. Yes, it did indeed far exceed that. The final price includes the auction house's commission. The auction house hasn't said who bought the Bible, but we know it wasn't Gavin. Einstein formulated... Did you know that Einstein formulated the theory of relativity and won a Nobel Prize in physics?
Does E equal MC squared?
Nice. He died in 1955. $68,000 for a Bible. Do we know if it was a Catholic Bible?
I don't think so.
Because that would be pretty funny if you were able to say $68,000 for the Bible and it's missing some books.
Yeah.
It doesn't even have Maccabees 1 and 2.
Yeah.
68 grand.
Yeah, it's a lot of money. It's interesting because the reason I found this curious, and I think it's the reason that it was sold for such a great amount of money and people on the Huffington Post wrote about it, is this whole, ridiculous debate about science and religion.
Yes, yeah.
And how could anyone like Einstein have possibly had any sort of faith, let alone owned a Bible, and then written something in it that's said what it did in a non-German accent? And when you look through history and the contribution of Catholics to the field of science, priests, a lot of them through the Middle Ages, so it's just a silly debate. And Pope Francis was a science teacher in his early years.
Wasn't it biology or
chemistry or physics,
or something like that from my media briefing. It was one of those science things.
Yeah.
But you're right. I mean, I think it is one of these, and we've talked a little bit about stories in the past, about the Vatican Observatory and the church's, long-running connection with science, and the fact that actually true science should be about seeking out the truth. And since the truth is also what true faith is about, that we're all on the same page. It's just coming at it from different angles. To have someone like Einstein. I mean, I'm not really that surprised to know that. That's not true. I'm a little bit surprised that he was able to actually write an inscription in the Bible saying as such. But it's relatively frequent that we find these great scientific minds. There are stories all over of them reaching a certain point in their theoretical discourse where they realize actually all I've done is prove more the case for God and for faith. Not disprove it, as some of the atheists on Reddit would imagine. So I think, but still, 68 grand, that's a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, because he died in 1955. I mean, so the Bible itself is not like, I mean, there's obviously some incredible, gilded manuscripts, hundreds of years old that are probably worth a lot more than that. But 68 grand, wow, Wouldn't it be hilarious if, like, stamped on the inside it was, provided by the Gideons or, stolen from the Drake Hotel or whatever,
Yeah. Or that they found out that it wasn't actually Einstein's writing.
Yeah. And someone paid $68,000. Still, it's a good read. A 68 grand, still a good read. Well worth checking out.
Yeah. I'll just download it.
While you're downloading, I will tell our fantastic audience where else they can read some amazing stuff and connect with us. If you would like to reach out and tell us what you thought of this episode and what all the panel, how awesome this whole big panel is. You can reach us via email at podcast@station15, station the number 1, number 5.co.nz. or NZ for our American listeners. You can reach us on the Twitter. We're at station number one, number five, facebook.com/station15. And the part that I missed that we're getting is our actual website, station15.co.nz, where we have our back catalogue of 15 station episodes, as well as some of our other projects over the years where we've had little dalliances into other shows. And there's always the hope that we will rekindle some of that stable.
You never know.
You never know. But in the meantime, what I do know is you can go there and listen to the back catalogue of episodes. And I would encourage you to do so. But if reading is more your thing and you don't have a $68,000 Bible nearby to read, you may as well go to beingfrank.co.nz. Is it still right to say that, you know, newly redesigned? It is still relatively fresh. The paint is still relatively fresh on the new design.
It is. So I can smell the paint every time I hog it.
If you haven't checked it out recently, go back and check it. Go see. Maybe it's changed a bit since you were there last. It does have new content being posted nearly every day, so it is worthwhile to check out some of the opinions that are on there. And if you need some more Gavin in your life, then check out catholicsoapbox.com for his blog. Great blog that it is. Maybe you're not into reading. And maybe you're not into audio, in which case I don't know why you're listening. Maybe you're into video. Well, we're branching out into that as well. So you can check out lostsheep.tv, www.lostsheep.tv, for our monthly Hangouts, Google Plus Hangouts, with the Southern Cross New Media Project, which is a collaboration, trans-Tasman collaboration, kind of like, you know, Anglicans and Catholics reaching across the divide. So do us Kiwis and Aussies get together and talk about new media and bring in some luminaries in the new media Catholic world from around the world.
And us.
Yeah, and us. That's why I said we bring them in. You should check that out as well. What else, Gavin, what else would the Southern Cross New Media Project, how else is that contributing to the world of new media for Catholics?
Well, if you're not into video or audio.
Yes.
Or reading.
Hate it, yes.
Or writing.
No, not a big fan.
But if you like listening to people in person.
Hey, meet space in real life, IRL.
Is that, see, I don't even know IRL. I know URL.
IRL, in real life.
Yeah, it was Indy Racing League, used to be. CNMC Melbourne. Do you know what CNMC stands for?
You tell me.
Catholic New Media Conference.
So that would be a conference about Catholic New Media.
You're a sharp man.
I have been told that. Never.
Now, our American listeners will say, duh, we've done it before. But
I doubt I'll actually say that, but yes.
No, they would probably say in an accent that I'm not going to do.
No.
But, so, yes, there have been CNMCs before. No, there has never been a CNMC outside the continental United States of America until September 2nd and 3rd, 2013. CNMC Melbourne, so that pretty much tells you where it's going to be. Mm. It's in Australia.
Not Melbourne, Florida.
No, not Melbourne, Florida. Otherwise, that would still be continental US.
Melbourne,
so, yes,
Victoria.
September 2nd and 3rd in Melbourne, Victoria, Australia.
Yes.
South Pacific, Southern Hemisphere. And Father Roderick von Hogan. No one's heard of him, probably.
No.
But he's an emerging star in this field.
He's going to be big. He's going to be big, I can tell. I reckon
he's going to write a book about it.
You watch this kid. I reckon there's some great stuff to come from him.
Yeah, I reckon there'll be a book with a picture of him with a lightsaber. That's what I reckon it's going to be.
That's quite a specific prediction. Yeah. So if people want to find out more about CNMC Melbourne and want the two of us to stop talking and just want to go there, and this is going to be awesome, see who's on the agenda, see who some of the speakers are going to be, and pay their money. Two questions for you, Gavin. One, where do they go? And two, how much is it going to cost?
CNMCmelbourne.com.
Right.
M-E-L-B-O-U-R-N-E.
Yes.
I think I spelled that right.
Yes.
CNMCmelbourne.com. And it's going to cost the princely sum. I know we're not supposed to be princes in the church. So the pastorly sum of $119 Australian.
What? Only $119? Are you kidding me?
Day and a half conference, $119. Unbelievable value.
That is unbelievable value.
Father Roderick's coming. Bishop Julian Porteous, who started Australia's first 24-hour Catholic online radio station, our friends at Cradio.
Indeed.
James Bergen.
Oh, that guy's trouble.
He's a New Zealand TV and radio star.
Oh, You're only
on TV
person?
Once and radio once. Yeah. That's enough for me. And a few other people. So it's going to be great. 139 if you're a New Zealander and want to come across the Tasman. We've got to charge you a bit more. That's actually a slight discount on the current exchange rate. But
right.
We figured if you're flying, we'd probably help you out a little bit.
You're very kind.
And so Americans, $7,000 if you'd like to come. No. So any Americans who would like to come, it would be so great to have you along. There is CNMC Boston later in the year. That might be slightly closer, depending on which part of America you live in. Actually, no. Anywhere you live in America is closer. Even Alaska is closer.
Melbourne is I tell you what, Melbourne's a fantastic city. I am really looking forward to coming across the ditch and coming to what's going to be a fantastic CNMC, the first ever, as you say, outside the US. And I think it would be fantastic for people to come and join us. If you've got more questions about it or you want to know more details, cnmcmelbourne.com. Go check that out. And
in all seriousness,
yeah.
If you are an American and did want to come, we would love to have you, which I already said.
Totally.
But at the moment, the dollar has improved quite dramatically.
Yeah, it has.
In the last couple of months. So whereas the US dollar was weaker than the Australian dollar just a couple of months ago, it's now about 10% stronger. So it's a good time to come. Your money will go further. Everything's cheap in Australia. Food, accommodation, everything. Registration for conferences.
Absolutely. If you're a Kiwi, it's a little bit more expensive, but it's still worth it. At $139, that's a steal at twice the price. You can actually also search for CNMC Melbourne on Facebook, and you can see some of the other people who are going along, and you get more details.
On the Twitter?
I don't know if we're on the Twitter. We are on the Twitter, aren't we?
You don't know if we're on the Twitter? Hello, I set it up. We're on the Twitter.
We're on the Twitter. We're on Twitter CNMC at CNMC Melbourne. Melbourne. It's been good to talk to you, Gavin.
Just it's you good and me. To talk to you, hey, James.
This is the you and me show. We
you should
do
stop
this.
Offending our fellow panelists and they'd come along.
I
remember
should.
What you said last month, but it must have been scandalous.
I can't imagine. Thanks very much. And thank you to all of our listeners. And we look forward to seeing as many of you as possible in September, which is only, we need to do a sleep count, but it's only, what, 2-3 months away?
No.
2 months.
Yeah, it's going to be, by the time people listen to this, it's going to be it's about 7 weeks.
That's crazy. Go get those cheap flights.
It should be 7 weeks from the July 15th.
Some of those speakers better start working on their presentations.
I know.
Speaking of which, I better get off. But get off this fantastic podcast. Thanks very much for listening, everyone. And we will talk to you again next month. Look forward to seeing you in 2 months. After which, we'll see you there. And until then, take care and God bless.
This production is affiliated with SQPN, the StarQuest Production Network, leading the way.